Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
You're listening to Double Feature from Los Angeles. This is Eric 13. And from FaceTime, this is Michael Kester.
That's where I live. I live on FaceTime. Rent is cheap.
I think everybody knows what we do with this show, but it is to pair two movies and to talk about them, not necessarily with contrast, but in a hope that it'll put the movies in a certain light.
Mm-hmm.
Or it'll be fun to watch them.
Sure.
Or your friends will hate you for always making them go through foreign films or whatever the show does.
Or you'll sit down and just watch two movies for a change instead of, you know, Transformers.
Two is better than one. And if you only watched one anyways, that's okay. Skip to 24 minutes in.
Yeah, we have protocol
and you
for
have
that.
A 50% chance of spoiling the one that you didn't watch.
However, if you stick around for the next few minutes, that percentage will drop dramatically.
What is the first movie and what is the second movie?
I'm assuming blindly.
You have a 50-50 shot as well here.
Let's say Daisies will be the first movie from 1966.
Great, you've got it.
And Pedro Almodovar's Bad Education will be the second film. Or if you're en español, La Mala Educación.
You know I love that. You know I love that.
I know you do.
I wanted to speak briefly about a pair of films we did this time on the first year of our show.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty brief. You can get that on Apple Music or Google Plus Music, whatever their thing is. Android Prime, Optimus.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where you get these things. It's on Amazon. You can get it wherever you get stuff. But go there and check it out. And being brief allows me to give Michael some flack about this theme. I have written down here.
Okay, hit me.
Progressive figure it out later double feature.
That sounds really accurate.
Which I'm okay with.
I like that. That theme, there's nothing I could come up with that is not under that umbrella.
That should be the theme of every show.
Mm-hmm.
I would like my notes to say progressive figure it out later double feature.
Yeah.
I just don't think I can repeat that phrase for 49 minutes. Let's spoil some movies then.
Daisies comes first. We didn't pick Daisies. I'd never heard of Daisies.
This is Martin. Again, I don't know about last names. Nobody has ever... People lost our email address. I don't know. Martin picked Daisies, which I'm glad he did because Daisies and a big shrug for me.
Uh-huh.
I would have never known.
Yep.
This is a 66 Czech film,
mm-hmm.
which is going to be amazing in contrast to what we're doing later on the show.
It is. It's also our second sub 80 minute Czech film this year on Double Feature. So congratulations on branching out. And furthermore, our second sub 80 minute Czech film directed by a woman.
What?
Nailing the progressivism this year on Double Feature.
Hold on. What is this other movie?
End of August at Hotel Ozone was
a
76 minute Czech film directed by a woman.
I never thought that that movie would come up so fucking much. And that's another listener one. So
totally.
Congrats. I look at this film and I have a lot of questions.
Okay.
I scream a lot of questions.
Cool. Well, I'm going to just tell you right now, I don't have the answers, but I can speculate incredibly well about a lot of this movie.
That's good. That's good. Well, I mean, you know, I'm blown away by a lot of things when I watch it. And the big thing, I'll just cut to the chase. When the movie ends, I go, the most important question here is why did all of that happen?
Mm-hmm.
What did this movie's clearly trying to give me a message.
Mm-hmm.
But before I can figure that out, I need to know what the hell.
Interesting.
I just watched.
Interesting.
So I figured it's kind of a hippie art piece because, you know, mm-hmm. flashing colors and
okay.
just everything about it says it's breaking free of the tyrannical, whatever regime. It doesn't, you know, bombs drop and then
think you're onto something.
People skip through the flowers.
Think you're onto something with the breaking free of the tyranny.
So I did a lot of reading about the Czech New Wave, which it appears that every country had a fucking New Wave movement.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to bore everybody with the Czech New Wave Wikipedia page, but just something to go look up.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time believing the level of...
Banned in the Czech Republic.
Was this banned?
It was, yeah.
Well, on a minor point, watching a movie from 66 in high definition, this just makes me crazy.
Dude, I know. What the fuck?
It is like another planet.
Those people look like real people.
The clarity is... It's like seeing, it's more than, oh, the movie looked really nice. It is like seeing something you have never seen before. It's like a space phenomena that happens only once every 2,000 years.
I watched the Karloff Bride of Frankenstein in the remastered high def.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what the fuck was going on. I was like, I'm pretty sure Boris Karloff was dead before he had that much facial definition.
Yeah, it's really nuts. And a lot of times films that are older like this, my brain somehow discounts them in a way. They were from a more primitive time. They couldn't use their tools in as advanced a way as we can now.
Sure.
You know, you only learn as people who come before you do things.
Standing on the shoulders of giants.
There you are. And for whatever stupid reason, my other stupid reason is countered when I can see something so crystal like this. It just makes it more, I can really see people on a set making this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that causes me to go, all right, well, where are their passions at? This is obviously a film of passion.
It becomes a challenge.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah, totally.
It becomes a lot harder to write anything off.
Exactly.
It becomes a lot more difficult to go, well, it was the 60s and people were blurry then, so they probably didn't know what the hell they were talking about.
Yeah.
But instead you see it in the definition that you're used to seeing movies that actually reach you, and immediately you drop the pretense of, well, this is old, but I'm sure it's got something to say.
Yeah.
And this is terrible. We shouldn't be going on the air saying any of this, but we all know this is the case.
Right.
And I think this movie too, one of the things that actually I felt really vindicated is that what I took from it, and I have an interesting kind of question too, but what I took from it was this kind of celebrated hedonism.
Sure.
You know, and they touch on it toward the end with the, how else could this end? And then they drown. And then the newspaper thing.
You mean the chandelier thing?
Well, yeah, but more so the newspaper dresses.
All right.
When it got banned in the Czech Republic, it was banned for depicting the wanton or some shit.
Really?
Yeah. So I was like, cool. So it is totally about hedonism. I'm totally on board with that then. Nailed it. But my question... and this was interesting. Did you know this was female directed? But I mean, while you were watching it?
I didn't know that. Okay. No, I didn't know that.
Did you then, while you were watching it, feel like this was anti-feminist or feminist? Not, you know, not capital F feminist,
right?
But, you know,
right.
pro or anti-women, which shade was it closer to, if not unequivocally one or the other?
Well, like I said, I thought the film definitely has a very strong opinion on something it's trying to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, I might run counter to what you and the NC-17 rating say.
Really?
We'll shelf that for a second.
I don't know if it's NC-17.
No, sorry, the unrated.
Okay.
the banned unrated film. The next film's the NC-17
yeah,
film.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, we'll shelf that. This is a film that would have been really, really low down on the film obscurity chart if it weren't so fucking friendly, if mm-hmm. everybody wasn't having such a good time. And it's very easy for me to forget that for some people, making films is a huge drag and they're just good actors,
mm-hmm.
or that the message of a film might be crass, or that not everybody likes being in a Russ Meyer film and not everybody thinks they're about celebrating humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And to celebrate humanity in an all-female film is to celebrate femininity in a way.
Sure.
It's not purely about their role as women, but the movie would have changed drastically. It's just as much about their role as robots, as women.
Sure.
Or as creaky humans, as women. So I definitely did think about that. I thought about it, especially because of, you know, the questions about femininity that I don't want to spoil the next movie are and aren't dealt with in certain ways mm-hmm. that we probably won't even fucking get to.
Right.
So I don't know. Yeah. I don't know, as always, is my answer.
To me, I felt like this movie, while depicting the wanton, say, was doing so from a perspective of liberty. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, that's what I meant about the breaking free hippie art.
Yeah, thing. Exactly. I think it's way more about we're not allowed to do this, say this, or show
it felt
this.
A little bra burning.
Yeah.
Which I believe is part of feminism. Mm-hmm. So there, maybe that's my answer.
But we're still doing it and we're making fools of the men and we're, you know, this, that, and the other thing. I mean, I think for me, the symbolism, the symbology of eating so much fucking food definitely pushes it into thematically into a place of gluttony where maybe to the, what is it? Everything in moderation, including moderation.
I've never heard that, but I love it.
It's way more in the camp of everything in excess, never moderation.
Yeah.
And so I definitely get the vibe that while I celebrate the liberty of these people, they're probably not exemplary as people.
Mm-hmm.
That I celebrate the fact that they are breaking free from norms and they are doing what they want and finding serious joy in life.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I'm glad not everybody is doing that. And maybe that is where depicting the wanton comes from.
Yeah.
Is, you know, from the same place as Don't Go See the Interview. It's just a scenario where people believe for some reason that if you go see a movie, you're going to intentionally spurn men and make them buy you dinner.
Well, this is always the conversation in film censorship. It's always, should people see this? Is it going to affect the way they do things? A question that always gets harder and harder for me because I want to go, fuck you. No, of course, films aren't going to make people do things. And then I go, I want to make films so that people do things. You know what I mean?
Right.
I want to make films that affect people and change their mind and blah, blah, blah. Hey, censor. Nobody's changing any minds around here. All right. Step away from my film. And, you know, it's something that goes back and forth depending on when it benefits me and my position in that personally.
Mm-hmm.
This is a movie I think that wants to change some minds.
Yeah. It wants to show the other side of something that people aren't necessarily allowed to see.
Well, so here's the problem I was talking about with maybe running counter to your open embrace of, I don't know, being wild and outrageous, of being the Bruce Wayne that buys the hotel and swims in the fountain for our mandatory Batman reference of the month. I think I'm glad we got that out of the way.
Jesus.
Otherwise you'd mention that fucking Batman quote again, and we just can't be quoting Batman every time. It is hard for me not to just watch this movie and exclaim, this is fucking awesome, over and over as I'm watching it.
I know.
I just think it is wonderful.
But do you know why? Well, I mean, just yes or no. Do you know why? Because for me, the answer is no, half the time at best.
I think I know.
But I'm still sitting there going, I love this. I love everything about this. And I'm like, people are watching it. Why is there so many different colors? I don't give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care why there's so many colors, but it's awesome and I want more.
That's okay, though. I think that's okay.
Yeah, it is okay.
The purpose of talking so much about something might be to figure out why the fuck you feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only not okay for you. It's okay for anybody who saw the film and went to the diner with their friends. But if you have a podcast, then you lose. I think you got so sad there. I'm joking. You're fine. No one is judging you. Double feature show at iCloud.com. No, but I mean, the fun of it is infectious to me, mm-hmm. right? I see two people really enjoying themselves. I'm empathic. I feel like, you know, I see a person smile, I smile. And of course, that runs the other way, which is usually what double feature is doing to me. But I don't know that I've ever seen someone so fucking happy to be alive as they're just dancing through food and doing things, that just doing whatever they want.
Until the end.
Until the end, of course, until the end. But they make every little tiny thing fun. Every little tiny fucking thing. And especially in contrast to the way the film opens, which is this really mechanical, you know, sweaty, grimy industrial machine churning away and the music and it stops and then like a fucking bomb drops or something. It's very warlike, the imagery, whether it's, I think it's war footage, right? It was all,
it is. It was it's war
all
footage.
So grating so fast where I'm going, I thought Daisies was going to be a skip through a field.
Daisies is flowers, guys.
And then that was a skip through a field. So I was also heavily relieved. But the reason that I look at this and love that so much is I am a person who likes the extremes. I like to celebrate the extremes. It's kind of an unfair thing to say because I don't like to celebrate the negative extremes. And who doesn't like positive extremes? So, you know, whatever. But actually, there are negative extremes I celebrate. I think eating in excess is terrible for you and people shouldn't do it, but somehow it makes me happy. It's somebody just going, whatever, fuck that. I'm just going to enjoy this. And for the longest time on this show, seeing smoking in a movie made me so happy. It might still make me happy.
Totally. Does for me.
And smoking is the fucking worst. But people tell you you can't smoke. And then I see people do it. I'm like, good for you. And I just, so I like the negative extremes too. I like people just trying to get the most out of life, trying to make themselves happy. And not, I think what it is they're not worried about other people's opinions or how something might oppress them. They're sticking their finger up to the man and just doing what they want.
Which I think is, it's actually really interesting because to talk about the ending, that's the part in the film for me where the imagery becomes really clear. And to talk about how they don't care about what the world thinks and the world's opinion and sticking their middle finger up. And then to have them show up after literally, but also metaphorically drowning.
Yeah.
And they're wrapped in these newspaper dresses, which to me symbolically shows now they do care. They're burdened and covered by what the world thinks.
Sure.
And they are now 100% bound by the public eye. And then they lay down and are miserable, but go, yeah, we're having a great time. It's the only moment in the movie where I go, yeah, wow, that is a pretty blunt theme.
All right. So this would be a good time, I think, to take off the shelf the thing that I said might run counter. And maybe I can talk, I can at least talk you away from this being blunt. But having seen the film and just being overwhelmed by how amazing it makes me feel and the excess and the 60s and all of it, I, 60s also, by the way, a fucking time of excess, feminism, anti-government. Just
sure.
You should be able to take off your shirt and run around like crazy and no one should bother you. But also it's in a different country and I don't know what the fuck was going on there.
Right.
So
could have been frog people at that point. That could have been frog town.
Right.
Hell was on his way to respect those two women.
People really need to hear the additional content shows because they're so good. It's once a month and they're fireside chats and they're so good. And anyways, they talk about in the beginning and the end of the film about those who are spoiled, about equating decadence to being spoiled.
To excess, right.
And also there's that thing at the end about fucking lettuce or whatever. This, this film is dedicated to those who only get
lettuce or cabbage
upset over it.
Yeah, a stomped cabbage patch.
Basically, I think that is... Let's dissect the lettuce sentence first here, and I'll make sure we're on the same page with that. To say that we're dedicating this film to those who get upset by stomping on lettuce is, to me, to say people who aren't paying attention to the real problems of the real world and instead are maybe of an upper class that that doesn't affect. Maybe they are... I look at this film almost as a commentary on a sort of royalty or a sort of somebody who is oblivious because they are spoiled.
Right.
Think of it like the celebration of double feature favorite Paris Hilton 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
right? My problems are not her problems. She lives on another plane where everything is great. And we all look at her and go, wow, she's spoiled. I mean, not you and I, but society.
Sure.
And this film becomes a satire of somebody who's running around being spoiled and just, you know, rolling around in the food and fucking doing whatever they want and using men for money. And the reason that I think that is because of the specific note about, I want to be spoiled mm-hmm. in the beginning. I want to just do all the things. Hey, I have an idea. Everyone's spoiled. Let's be spoiled. Come on, let's go.
Yeah.
And then in the end, the way they reach out for help, it's kind of like, oh no, but we're spoiled. People don't care about us. Let's drift away into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And to accept that, oh, being spoiled was really bad for everyone. Let's lay down and have a chandelier fall on us.
Yeah. See, I don't get that. I don't feel that though. I feel like there's...
They go back to clean up their mess. I just feel like...
But then when they're sitting there, the thing for me that's so resonant is when they're lying there and one says to the other, you know, now we're happy. And the other one goes, we're still pretending though, right? This is still pretend. And the girl goes, no, we're actually happy. And then puts on a shit-eating grin while the girl with dark hair sits there miserably for a moment and then starts to kind of smile. And then they fucking die. That's how the movie ends in my head. Is they go, you're happy for society. And they go, but we're pretending, right? And then they go, not really. You have to be really happy because people are watching you now. And then they go, okay, well, I'd rather be crushed by a chandelier if I can't eat escargot off of a shoe.
Or to say that is when you are crushed by a chandelier.
Yeah.
That's once you've said you're that, you basically by this give
weight.
It up.
The weight crushes you. I mean, I think one of the reasons I like Daisies as a type of film, I was describing it to a friend as the kind of film that people who claim to love art house walk into an art house film and go, oh, fuck. Because it is so much more art house than the typical art house flick.
Does that mean that I've transcended?
It's double. Yeah. I mean, you're double stuffed art house right now. This is the second Great. Story of art house.
Great.
And I think that one of the reasons I like it so much is because I feel so much less bound by constraints when discussing interpretation.
There is something about flashing colors that goes, just think whatever you want.
Flashing colors and you know, just whole dynamic shifts of scenes and visuals that I'm not sure anybody outside of maybe the folks behind the creation of the film know what the explicit themes might be. And instead, it opens up a dialogue about the very thing that it may be trying to make a point about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's the true power of a little succinct grenade like Daisies, is that it's not necessarily going feel this way, feel that way. It's going feel something and discuss whether or not that's the right way to feel.
Yeah. And for to be able to go through an entire film that way is... It's actually really nice.
Yes.
It's a very different experience though than lining Daisies up next to any other film. Seems like we should be lining it up next to Warhol. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That there might not be anything we've done in the canon of our show that really is as much of a... Daisies hangs on the wall and you stare at it and just kind of go, so what do you think of this?
Yeah, exactly.
Also, year 8 must be the year of blackface on double feature. I don't know what's going on here.
I don't know if that counts as blackface.
Bad Education is a 2004 Pedro Almodovar movie.
Yeah, that's our third Almodovar.
This is the NC-17.
Yes, it is.
How much do you want to talk about the time gap here? Does that play in here?
What do you mean?
When we look at this movie, we just considered a movie about decadence, about a very different subject. And I wonder, you know, when we're talking about progressive things that happen in society, I immediately start watching Bad Education and see that we have a very different palette of problems, although the film tackles so much.
Does it ever?
I mean, this is, to go through the list even seems like it would take longer than 24 minutes.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How do you think you could give, if I want to look at this like we look at Primer, do you think you have enough of a handle on this movie to even tell me how many characters are in it?
I've seen this movie about 6 times. This is, this is, I believe of what I've seen. It's hard to say because man, the skin I live in, but I think this is my favorite Almodovar movie. I think fairly confident.
I have that same sentiment.
And yeah, well, before we dive into things like characters or a general narrative that is chronological, I would like to point out, contrasting the previous film, how few women are in this movie. And I don't mean women in the 2016 gender is fluid sense. I mean women in the 2004, they don't identify, most of them don't identify as women.
Right, right. I'm not sure if any of the characters would identify as women.
I think Ignacio would by the end of his situation. Maybe. You're right. Yeah. No.
Really interested in, well, so when you look at the thing that's written, The Visit it's called, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The Visit really seems to describe characters as being in drag,
mm-hmm,
rather than as being, you know, two women out on an adventure.
You're right. No, you're right.
So much so that another person reading it would know where that comes from. A really interesting piece of that too is that as much as we're talking about these terrible things that happen to people and continue happening to people,
mm-hmm,
and swindles and crimes and just everything under the sun, I don't feel like they are necessarily related. I don't think anybody is going, this person was a drag queen because fucked up stuff happened,
right,
as a kid.
Right. I don't think so either.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How does that, I mean, does that play at all into, let's say, the Catholicism or the relationship with the priest or anything from the childhood?
I'm not 100% sure. I know there's definite, I mean, correlation is not causation, right? Let's start
sure,
by saying that.
Well, in film, sometimes it is.
Yeah, well, but in general, just because two out of these three homosexual characters were abused by a fourth homosexual character, mm-hmm, correlation is not causation.
Right.
For example, Enrique, probably not molested by a priest, still gay.
Right. Enrique is the director,
right,
for people keeping tabs, mm-hmm, on the 19 characters who are actually 4 characters,
right,
in the movie. It's okay. So it's Enrique. It's Ignacio, who,
yeah,
turns out to be, there's spoilers on the show, Juan,
yep,
who likes to go by Angel.
Right. And then there's Ignacio, who turns out to be dead.
Yeah. And then Zahara is just a fictional drag queen inspired by, right?
Isn't Zahara that? Is fictional Ignacio, right?
Okay, yeah, who said...
Is played by Juan as Ignacio as Angel, right? Continue.
See, I feel like even though we've laid all that out, at some point, it just became impossible to follow.
Well, I mean, you didn't even talk about Father Manolo and his new name.
right? Okay, so... This didn't occur to me in the 15 things to talk about, but I'm just going to fucking go off on this direction. Seems like identity might be a big part of this movie.
Mm. I think identity might be a big part of Almodovar's filmography. If you take a look at
it. A thing that was under my nose this whole time.
Yeah.
It's just dawned on me that, holy fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have characters, you're talking about gender identity, you're talking very specifically about portrayals by other people,
mm-hmm,
both in...
Literal and fictional.
Yeah, yeah. You're talking about the movie, you, mm-hmm, know, mm-hmm, portraying people in the movie, but also portraying people who are dead in real life to,
sure,
gain the upper hand on something.
There's also the notion of blackmail, which in and of itself is a portrayal of a reality that isn't existing. and also the whole I have $1 million, but I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah. Well, if someone has blackmail on you, the idea is that there's part of yourself that you don't want to show the world.
Exactly.
There's part of your identity.
Uh-huh.
To back up a step too, I think this irony you find at the end of the movie where Enrique knew and Ignacio knew that Enrique knew, but they didn't talk to each other about it and they weren't aware that the other person knew they knew.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about Ignacio Juan, not Ignacio Ignacio. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Ignacio, who is not Ignacio.
Right.
So there is a lie that is told there. There's a false impersonation. There's identity theft, really.
Yeah.
That'll make it easy. There's identity theft one. And this isn't the kind of thing where they both know a truth about the other one, but they just don't acknowledge mm-hmm. it. Or there's a secret there, but nobody talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
They know it's one step deep, but they don't know the other person knows they know.
Right. They think they have the upper hand on both
and
both sides.
That becomes a huge piece of identity too, because at that point, who is that lie for?
Right.
You know, the lie is, are you lying that the other person knows about you? Are you, when you're impersonating someone, are you doing that because you like that other identity or because you think it will, you know, get you ahead?
Well, and
you think it'll get you apart or whatever.
I think that brings us into another really interesting and powerful theme in Bad Education, which is motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And to go back to my previous horrible jab about gender fluidity and actually apply it in reality, how fluid is gender if it means international stardom, right? The question that I think rises slowly throughout the film for me as I'm watching it is, to put bluntly, how gay is Juan?
Yeah, right, right.
In a world of gender fluidity, is he only as gay as it behooves him to get rammed in the ass? Or is he actually on some level, you know, attracted to Enrique, Father Manolo?
How's the Kinsey scale working there?
Right.
Is that kind of the question?
I'm just wondering, because, you know, when you look at it, he only shows up and he only does stuff when people have something he wants.
Yeah.
When he knows that somebody might have the power to get Ignacio out of the way, or when he knows that maybe if he shows up and is attractive enough to a certain character, maybe he can get that character to engage with him sexually, and then that way kind of use that as a crowbar into being the lead in this film.
Yeah, right.
I mean, we see him learn to be a drag queen. We see that process happen from a more manual standpoint than a natural one.
Sure.
You know, he doesn't show up to the bar and go, I feel like this has always been a part of me. He shows up to the bar with a fucking notebook.
Yeah.
And so to me, those are kind of interesting red flags down the path of really how honest is Juan to his own identity versus his motivation. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I think, so there's the question embedded in that is when you're talking about Juan, is a bigger part of his identity homosexuality or, well, let's say sexuality at all.
Right.
Or prosperity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is it really about being in his own skin or is it, I have a feeling.
I mean, it could ripple out to being adoration too, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because then he, you know, he's first adored by the priest and then by Enrique and then ideally by his millions of fans.
Yeah, right. Do you think that being an international pop star is his end game? I mean, is he going, I need to real, just the same way as Ignacio is going, I need to pay for the rest of my surgery. Is Juan going, I need to become an international star?
I don't know. I honestly think we see a glimmer of that. And this is a weird moment, but I think we see a glimmer of that with the push-ups. Do you remember that? That tiny little weird thing? There's a scene where Juan is doing,
he
dances and it's a twofold thing because for me, that's not a natural thing. That push-up thing.
Mm.
But I think that to me, I see two things. I see that's obviously a thing for Fowler Manolo to get a Rodney over, but also I see it as kind of this seed of, you know, him moving, you know, the idea of him getting into that pop star mentality, maybe.
Yeah.
That kind of famous, I don't know. And it's a lot to read, I guess. And I don't know the answer. That's still one of the most begging questions to me, is Juan's ultimate motivation, where his end game is, because I don't see him motivated at the very top when Fowler Manolo first comes back to meet with Ignacio and is introduced to Juan. Juan just walks right the fuck back out of the room.
Yeah.
So to me, there isn't an engagement. You know, they don't have that stereotypical,
I see what you mean,
melodramatic eye lock. And let's be honest, Almodovar would put that shit right in the fucking movie, because it's Pedro Almodovar and it's nothing if not melodrama.
Yeah.
And
well,
so
to back up a little bit to my previous question, then I think if we go, this isn't about his nature to be a chameleon and to be interested in acting because he changes all the time or anything to that effect. If we're saying ultimate goal is international stardom,
mm-hmm,
then the question becomes how much of what he does is about sexuality and how much is about prostitution.
Exactly. Is he fucking his way to the top,
mm-hmm,
or is he just fucking?
Yeah. Well, it's really striking to me too, the first time, you know, that first time we see him, or the first time he sees the priest,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So the earliest, I guess, we see him is what I mean to say. He does not resemble any other version of him pretty much in the rest of the movie.
Exactly.
He wanders in the room so inconsequentially.
To watch TV.
I know. It seems like reminded me of True Romance, that Brad Pitt.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Just like, yeah. Hey, where'd the Cheetos go? Have you seen the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to think that's him with his guard down,
mm-hmm,
maybe,
mm-hmm,
maybe it is, who even knows, then compared to these other, you know, that's different than the excitable version of him who's going to take notes,
mm-hmm,
who should also be the same guy, right? It's just
ultimately, well, but further down the line, there's a lot that happens between point A and point B there.
Mm-hmm.
I think to go back, one of the biggest cogs in the convoluted machine in trying to find out who these people really are is the bizarre fucking dynamic between the priest and these brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have a priest who rapes a kid. I mean, just, I'm going to lay this out for you just because I'm not sure if you've actually considered the breadth of where this goes. So you have a priest who rapes a kid.
Uh-huh.
That kid grows up to blackmail the priest. The priest comes to discuss the blackmail and falls in love with that kid's younger brother, whom he engages in a consensual relationship with, in so much that he then offs the kid he originally raped. Okay. So now murder and rape, same kid.
Mm-hmm.
Then that kid breaks it off with the priest,
uh-huh,
and then attempts to become an actor in a film where he is raped by that priest.
Yeah. Right.
So for me, the most difficult to unpack aspect of this film is Fowler Manolo.
Mm-hmm.
He's to me a sexual berserker because you never see him not out to fucking get his dick wet.
Yeah, right.
And
his motivation's pretty easy in comparison.
Right. But to me, it feels so sinister that watching these passionate people with goals outside of getting their dicks wet round him.
Uh-huh.
I feel like he makes no goddamn sense in this dynamic. I mean, in the film, obviously it's amazing,
yeah,
but I'm just saying these three people, to me, it's, you know, fucking three flowers in a bowl. I just don't see, I don't understand what the fucking bowl is doing in the middle of these other three flowers.
Can we go back to your sandwich metaphors? Because now I don't even know.
Yeah, thank you.
After 8 years, I at least figured out what the fuck those meant. Okay, so let's add a different thing to this and see if it helps us or makes this more complicated.
Uh-huh.
As you're giving that timeline, one of the craziest things to me is that Ignacio, real Ignacio.
Sure.
Walks into the apartment, I guess, house, apartment, whatever.
Right. And just ignores the affair.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
It doesn't even faze him.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't care. Doesn't care about it at all.
He's such a selfish character. I mean, money and drugs, man. Money and drugs.
I know, but don't you think for selfish reasons that would... Imagine you're seeing somebody, you walk into your house, and that somebody is... I mean, I don't even need a metaphor here, right?
Yeah.
Imagine someone raped you, and then you walk in that house, and that person is fucking your brother. You don't feel... Even if you're the most selfish person in the world, and it's all about you, that's your brother... And that's your former priest.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you say, you're not even affected by it. You don't even see it.
I mean,
give me my money. I need drugs.
I think that one of the other, the melodrama plays out the way the melodrama should, which is wrap up the story and then go, and the other two shitty ones fucking died. But how irredeemable three out of these four characters are.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's the moment where, to me, Ignacio is so checked out. I mean, I don't get the vibe. I don't know if you do, but I don't get the vibe that Ignacio is going, Father Manolo, you raped me. You owe me compensation. Ignacio's going through his mental Rolodex of how can I get money?
Yeah, right.
And he goes, oh, there was that fucking priest who stuck his dick in my ass. I'll tell his fucking wife.
I'll tell his parents. Yeah, right. I'll tattle on him.
Mm-hmm.
Way to make something inconsequential.
Thanks.
No big deal, tattle. Well, that's confusing to me because of all of the different ways he's represented throughout the movie. Because we're seeing this fucking identity thing is... Here we have a movie that maybe you think of it as a niche movie, but it has everything.
Yes.
It has comedy. It has fucking drama. It has a mm-hmm. love story, thriller, blackmail, murder, while being
an NC-17 rating,
a smart and edgy movie. Yeah. Tackling taboos. And I can't even get past fucking identity. Mm-hmm. I can't even.
Mm-hmm.
So we have real Ignacio. When I see real Ignacio, I feel like that's not who I expected at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've now seen a fake real world version. And I've seen the screen portrayal.
Mm-hmm.
And neither of those come off, I don't think. You know, you've seen it more than I have. Neither of those, to me, says drug addict.
Agreed.
Which, when you talk about the real Ignacio, seems to be a mm-hmm. huge part of the identity. And so, you know, you're wondering how much you know about a person based just on what they show you. Or on how often you see them and in what context.
Mm-hmm.
If you only see a person at your job, all you know about them, really, all the only experience you have is what they're like when they're there. And that kind of front that they're showing you. And so for this all gets back to your question with Juan, I think he may be looking for identity. And not knowing, by the time he comes to Enrique, he thinks, I need to be an actor. And so I need this role.
Mm-hmm.
Enrique thinks, I need to make this film. And also, I'm essentially going to blackmail rape this guy over here. So I don't think he's off the hook.
Yeah. Okay.
Either.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you know what I mean? Because he's kind
sure.
of... He's making him an unwilling prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think he's totally morally in the clear, but he is a total victim in this situation. Although that's...
So is everybody. So is everybody.
Also true of other... Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know.
Victims and rapists, all of them.
Yeah. So, wow. Yeah, really.
We should have just started. Yeah, Bad Education's about a bunch of victims and rapists.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Well, the priest's more rapey than everyone else. Let's just state the obvious here.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to see that other countries have the same goddamn problems.
Catholicism, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Must be that dogma. Could be that dogma. Just saying. That's the 2004 film. Done with the social social consciousness of 2018. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
None of these things are, hey, you know what's going to be weird? Drag. So let's really, it's not a moment in Kinky Boots where everybody has to deal with how strange, you know what I mean?
Sure.
It's probably made the same fucking year, isn't it?
Do you want me to leave the seat up or down? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not dealing with a bunch of, oh, I'd want to be progressive about this, but I don't know how. It just blows right past that and into all this really fucking complicated stuff. Way to go. What happens here?
The website, which is doublefeature.fm. You mentioned it once. Let's talk about it again. Doublefeatureshow@icloud.com. That's the email where you go. You can spout off or pat us on the back or do one and then the other.
It's true. It's true.
I believe that last one's called a rusty trombone.
Oh my God. I like that after all this time, you are still able to bring a otherwise pretentious show, fucking heavy, theme crazy show, down to sailor speak, down to rusty trombone. I think that's, I think that's good. We want to keep people in the circle. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to, we don't want anybody to feel like an outsider here, especially not Brianna Kruger, Rod Fielder, Seth Hanasek, Enrique, David Koch, who I know has a filthy mouth, and Leo Napolitano, who's probably offended by our language. I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
Okay.
I'm too detail obsessive to not say something about the first year. I know I made a joke about it, but I have to, it'll bug me if I don't at least say the titles. We did Melinda and Melinda and Double Indemnity. So Double Indemnity was a film noir and a really good one, actually, that I watched again pretty recently. And Melinda and Melinda was a Woody Allen film, a director that we would learn a lot more about later on the show. Neither of those are what we're doing next week.
Yeah. So after this, you get another fanboy moment when we cover Gone Girl next week.
Oh yeah.
So we're going to do Gone Girl with Rachel getting married.
That's really funny.
We're doing that. The idea there is a stain on the American dream sort of idea. I've never seen either of these movies.
Oh, that's great. I haven't seen Rachel Getting Married. I think that was your idea to pair that, which is, again, just extremely funny to me. I actually think Gone Girl might be one of my favorite Fincher movies.
I know. So you know what else is one of your other favorite Fincher movies is the movies David Fincher has directed. So, right.
Well, yeah. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. I defy you to name a Fincher movie that's not one of your favorite David Fincher movies. That's how I feel about you and David Fincher.
Panic Room?
Watch more fucking film?
Girl with the Dragon Tattooing? I guess. I mean, I don't. Alien 3? I really defended that a lot, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
I don't mean to like all the Fincher movies. I really don't. I mean to go, listen, there's two or three that are really good.
Right.
But I would watch any of them right now. So I am a shill. I'm a David Fincher shill.
Watch more Fincher film.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the battleship Pretension Fleet.